Freely as we walked along the road. He said me ass is tired and I'd like to shed me load. I've had no refreshment since I left me home, you see, and I'm weary out of travelling, said the tart man to Marley. Said I, good man, your cart is worn.
Podcasting from old. Studio 2520 somewhere near Akron, Ohio. This is Tackling the Chicane. Yeah, so the intro's much shorter when you're in the room at Studio 2520. I don't have all of the Zencaster campus of Otterbein University stuff to go through, so...
Spring Break 2024 edition.
It's been a real ripper so far, huh?
It's been crazy. But glad to be back in live in studio. I can do a little color on the music if you want me to.
Yeah, we talked about these guys couple of weeks ago.
Mm-hmm.
And as my playlist grows, came across these guys during a walking session at the Y. Mm-hmm. And this is the Merry Wallopers.
Yeah. So very interesting sort of story with these guys. So obviously that's a traditional Irish tune, the Turf Man from RD. These guys are probably no older than Bailey. Like, shout out to Bailey if he's listening. They're from Dundalk, Ireland. And it's two twin brothers and their friend initially for this recording here. And they put out that EP in 2019. And then obviously we know what happened shortly after with the pandemic. And they got really big because they would do these live stream like shows in their basement during COVID when there was nothing else to do. They would do it on YouTube and a ton of people would watch.
Oh, sweet.
Yeah. And they got signed to a record label and they have two albums now that are both really good. So very interesting group.
Yeah, I'm sure a few more tracks will make it onto the playlist that is known as A Wee Pint.
Seasonal, of course.
Correct. Well, sometimes in the summer, if I get a chance, I like to listen to the same kind of music.
Mm-hmm.
There's always something good about Irish pub music.
Yeah. I mean, I listen to them a lot. So.
Yeah.
In that
kind of where I'm at right now, obviously, with the month that we're in, so
guess as Richard has of course made his appearance for those not privy to the studio here, a fully packed show, as we are basically going to dive into everything that was the Bahrain GP weekend, and then obviously a little color on Saudi Arabia, which is, as we record, in 2 days. I know both of us were able to see a little bit of practice, so we'll definitely touch on that as well. And then a pretty watchable Manchester derby that we are going to get into and take a bit of a deeper dive into what is shaping up to be a pretty sweet finish to the Premier League season, as there are three dogs in the fight for the title, it seems like. So hopefully that continues. But speaking of title races, are we done already? Week one in F1.
Well, first, let me say this. When we say Richard makes an appearance, we mean that he is on the console and inches away from both microphones and encroaching on every square inch of free real estate here, which is not very much to begin with. Yeah. So he's not adjacent to our equipment. He is
on
pretty much all over it. So, as much as I would like to say no to that, answer that question as no, we've seen pretty much how this is going to go, just a race in. Now, with that being said, there's a lot of variables and a lot of things that can happen from race to race and weekend to weekend.
Mm-hmm.
I'm going to try to hang my hat on some mid-pack competition. This sounds an awful lot like last year.
One weekend.
But so if you're going to watch this series, you're going to have to come to grips with a couple of things. Number one, in the modern era, there will be a dominant team.
Mm-hmm.
It just doesn't seem like, and of course, I'm only a few seasons in with a really close look at the series, but this isn't a series where it's like NASCAR, where any given weekends, it could be some other team.
Yeah.
Or people have an opportunity to win.
Mm-hmm.
It's not set up that way, and it's very much on purpose, I believe. Some people would ask, then why watch? Well, because it's more than just finishing positions, and I got drugged down into the mire of this sucks the first race, because it was so badly contested, and a second a lap for 17 laps is unacceptable. So he's 19 and a half seconds out after 21 laps, and I just got frustrated. I was like, oh, I got to sit here for another hour and a half, you know?
Yeah.
But then you kind of, I'd come up for air and be like, okay, let me focus on something else.
If you want to watch wheel-to-wheel racing in action, just watch IndyCar. And I can't express that enough to listeners. If you want to watch open-wheel racing at a high level that you don't know who's going to win before it starts, or, you know, you can't just be like, well, Verstappen's going to win, just watch IndyCar.
So, point well made, and unfortunately for IndyCar, who deserves it in the United States more than F1, had IndyCar landed the Netflix deal for a Drive to Survive-like series, they probably would have propelled themselves to the number one watched motor racing sport in the country.
Yeah, this is a tangent, but IndyCar is sort of the sport that hates itself more than any other. It's a constant battle of pretty much shooting themselves in the foot when it comes to, I mean, he is just relentless right now, but
yeah, I just give him the boot.
Anyways, yeah, but the thing with F1 is you're not watching because it's the most competitive racing in the world. You're watching because it is the most complex and advanced race cars assembled, basically the fastest land machines that, maybe not the fastest, but the most advanced land machines that a human can produce, and you're watching 20 of the best drivers in the world drive them.
Right.
It's never been about, well, we're trying to see how close we can make all the action.
Yeah. Agreed. And it's easy to sit back in your living room and watch someone go down a straight at 206 miles an hour. and especially during practice, and then come up on a vehicle who's going 80.
Yeah, we saw that today.
I mean, this is, it is a spectacle. There's no question about it. If you're going to tune in on race day only and hope for a NASCAR-esque or even an IndyCar-esque experience, you're going to be disappointed. Mm-hmm. But on the other hand, like as you said, the fact that, you know, this is the highest level, technologically speaking and talent speaking, it kind of makes it a little bit more sufferable. Mm-hmm. And then you can choose, first of all, if you're not a Red Bull fan, you better pick a couple of other teams to root for, and look for these types of things. Okay, who made the best call, pit stop strategy wise, and tire strategy is the most important thing of any of the race strategies. It's always about tire. And you know, there's going to be some entertaining stuff happen. I guarantee it. But yeah, you can't really focus on the fact that this team is as dominant as it is. And again, I wish I would have had the passion for the series earlier, because then I could have been used to the cycle of, you know, people got really pissed because Mercedes crushed everybody for 7 years.
Yeah.
And how quickly the tide has turned.
I guess for me, it's like I've been watching soccer for a decade, and that's pretty much the way it goes too, because there's no, in F1 has this now, but in Europe especially, there's no salary cap. So the team with the most money usually wins the most, and I've always been kind of used to that. So to me, it's not as shocking or not as, disappointing to see Red Bull dominate like this. I want it to be more competitive at the top, but if you take a look at Bahrain, and outside of Verstappen, who is just, he's a freak of nature, that's really all he is, the series is damn competitive, more than really it's ever been.
Yeah,
from driver to driver.
Yeah, and I watched the race in its entirety, and then I was going to go back and do highlight reel to take notes. Never ended up happening, so I'm trying to recall if there were any particular key incidents in Bahrain. It looks like you have a whole page.
I took some notes.
I've said this before, and as much as I like to take notes for the podcast, sometimes you just have to watch the race purely.
Yeah.
And not to sound stupid, but when you're taking notes watching a soccer match or a GP, the experience is different.
Yeah.
It's not as relaxed.
No.
You're constantly having to make sure that you're putting the right stuff down on the paper. So the first one, I just kind of sat back and watched. But yeah, if you've got, refresh my memory, if you will.
Yeah, so just going from the weekend in general, it was pretty obvious that Red Bull was sort of just kind of chilling in practice. And Verstappen is the king of sounding like he's kind of upset on the radio, but in reality, it's very, very minute details of the car that he just kind of wants tweaked, basically. So he was doing that all weekend. And then, of course, you know, you get into qualifying and he's tearing it up. The Ferraris in general looked okay. That's a team that I would have liked to see be maybe a little bit more explosive out of the gate. And then we'll get into this maybe after the race highlight reel here, but I think there were some teams with maybe more speed than we expected, and I'll leave it at that for now. But Okay, so we get the standing start lineup on the grid. Verstappen gets away pretty easily. No real issue there. The top of the field was pretty much fine. Stroll gets spun, if you remember. He was, I believe, Hulkenberg gets into the back of him, and there was damage there
for
both of those cars.
So that immediately pissed me off.
Yeah.
Because now Haas... We're not even 40 seconds into this race, and they've fucked themselves, basically.
Yeah.
You know, they're tangent, I guess. If these guys don't do something to get out of the basement, and in practice this week, they looked horrendous too.
Honestly. Okay, so we clearly see it differently here. They look faster than I thought they were going to be.
Really?
Yeah. I thought they were going to be horrendous, so maybe that's where I'm coming at. They were competitive in the sense that we're not scoring points, but...
Yeah.
They were not 19th and 20th. That was reserved for Alpine, who, you know, tangentially, again... Well, I don't know what the hell happened in 3 months there, but that team is a shit show.
Well, I think it has a lot to do with upgrades.
Yeah.
And some guys they capitalize on upgrades and they do all the work behind the scenes. And for the average listener, you know, some of these factories, if you will, who are building bespoke race cars. Nobody gives you a car and says, just paint it.
Yeah.
You have to build it.
Mm-hmm.
You know, 600 to 1,000 people work at these places to build these cars. And when the upgrades come, well-funded teams like Red Bull and Mercedes and Ferrari, they can handle the upgrade package. I think it was strictly a case of Alpine, who, you know, made a little bit of a splash last year. Maybe with this new package, they just couldn't get it worked out.
Clearly not. And
your point is well taken with Haas. I think my frustration with Haas lies with the fact that we have an owner who is absentee.
Yeah. That's very annoying, and we were talking about that off air. This is a guy, Gene Haas, that you don't see his... Have you ever seen him at a fucking race, ever?
No, and that's important.
Yeah.
And the other thing is if you're going to come to the show, figure out a way to come to the show. Don't show up with your pit box that's four seats when everyone else's pit box is 16 seats.
Yeah. If you're going to be an F1...
I mean, even Williams has a better pit box.
Well, Williams has a shitload of money. They're just horribly ran. But you know what I mean? It's like, I get what you're saying. If you're going to be in the dance, you need to meet the standards.
Put the right dress on.
Yeah, exactly. Don't give me some bullshit about we're cutting costs, so we need a three-seater pit box. No, you... F1 is about the indulgence, so indulge and try to be competitive, which, whatever.
No, that's where the frustration with that team lies.
Mm-hmm.
And the compatriots will speak if we don't see some kind of change from getting Gunther Steiner off and out. They already did after the first race. We better see some action from this new head of thing. What I always forget his last name. His first name's Ayao.
Ayoga Komatsu.
Komatsu.
Yeah. Which again, the team looked better than I thought. So we'll see.
Yeah.
We'll
finish up that first race, which I'm trying to think if there was anything
else
that was of note. Yeah, go ahead.
Russell and Leclerc, and Russell, I would say, versus the Ferraris was an interesting battle. Mercedes and Ferrari, like I said, I think in a group text or something, these are two teams that there is very, very little to separate them at the moment. Russell, it looks like a guy who is really coming into his own now that Hamilton's pretty much all but gone. Another thing, Hamilton, it's going to sound kind of like I'm being an ass, but you clearly don't give a fuck about this season. I mean, he is dead weight, and he's been like that the last two seasons. I can tell this move has been, tinfoil hat. I can tell this move has been in the works forever because he is just wheeling that thing around. I know he had some battery issues or whatever, but dude, come on. You can't qualify 10th in the Mercedes.
He's not angry.
No.
And that is a sign of something afoot. Obviously, now we know what was afoot. But if you honestly think that this guy's going to go out there and hang his shingle on Mercedes this year, no, he's going to go out there. He's going to cruise around.
Yeah, that's basically,
you know, he doesn't give a fuck if he gets points or doesn't get points. I mean, he's going
to be upset.
He's going to try to put on his best face so that people are like, well, how is he going to go to Ferrari if he can't even make P X, you know? But
he just seems checked out, and I noticed that
he's
all
definitely
last
checked out. I mean,
and we talked about how is this move going to affect the season? Bang.
Well, just wait until 3-4 months from now when the other stuff starts dropping, because this stuff's not going to drop after the end of this season.
Yeah.
As we get closer to the last GP of 2024, the stuff's going to start swirling.
Well, we already, so Sainz, I think, is the story of this last weekend. He pretty much once again said go blow to Ferrari and had that great overtake on Leclerc, and then got that podium. I expect, this is stuff I just say off air, I expect the Ferraris eventually to be faster than Perez, similar to last season, and that's going to be very interesting because All Sainz is doing, I mean, this is resume work because he needs a seat, and he will get one, obviously. He's good enough. So he's driving with a purpose.
And everyone at some point will, not at some point, everyone will be driving with a purpose, because if you don't think that every single one of these guys has thought, where can I go? Who's going to pay me? Mm-hmm. You know, advancing my position in the series.
Yep. Especially
except for maybe half. Logan Sargeant, who's probably wondering, how am I still here?
So lap 10, Sargeant goes off the track. I made my thoughts clear on that.
Look, I want to love Christ. Williams. I do. They're my kind of team. Storied racing. Unseated from their position back in the early 2000s or late 90s.
Mm-hmm.
Great livery, likable guys, likable team principal. But dude, I better see some flashes of brilliance from this guy, or else he's going to be driving in IndyCar series, which he should be so lucky.
I think he's got IndyCar written all over him, and he'll be damn good in IndyCar because he'll get a good ride. F1, again, this is the top rung of motorsport in the world. So the difference between Logan Sargeant and Verstappen is not really that large in the grand scheme of things, but the subtle differences make a world of difference in this series. He just seems so nervous all the time. It's like, dude, pop a Zen before the race or something. he's always just, and he was doing fine until then. He was riding around P14, competitive, and then randomly just kind of goes off track. And it's, well, there's your race. So,
well, and
and you're going to have to beat Albon
again
times.
for the people who sit at home, and we do it too. I mean, we sent a text immediately. These cars are on a very thin margin of error.
Yeah. It's,
and what we see happen when someone goes off track or spins is a result of many, many things in play. But the fact of the matter is you have to be on your A game. And so then I go backwards and I go, okay, well, a guy pulls out 19 and a half seconds away from everybody. That's a game. Obviously, this kid's good.
The thing about Max Verstappen that is different from the dominance of other past drivers. Well, one, here's a big difference, and this isn't to his credit. These cars are just way, way, way more reliable than they used to be. So they don't just sometimes, but if it's built well, they don't just blow up like they used to. And Max Verstappen finished every single race last year. That is not really, that is pretty rare even now. So for that car to just be able to constantly be finishing is a big deal. And he doesn't, when's the last time you've seen him make a mistake? You can't even remember.
Yeah. In the 1.5 seasons that I've been doing this, he hasn't made a mistake. So
exactly. So you have the perfect balance of talent, performance, and reliability, yeah, in the greatest, potentially the greatest car assembled in F1 ever. So there,
well,
you have
deserved
it. Yeah,
position deserved. So I shall take a different lens on the series after the first race. I may have been falsely led to believe that, and of course F1 is going to do this leading up to the race. They're going to make you think that somebody has the back door.
Yeah.
They didn't have the back door. They probably don't have it this weekend. Practice was entertaining to watch. I think he was in third or fourth after P2. But that's all bullshit. I mean,
yeah,
he's reserving.
Yeah. He goes all out when he needs to.
Right.
Yeah. The one major difference is Saudi Arabia is more of they consider it a street course, whatever. It's narrow, it's fast. So Perez is, that's sort of his bag, and he won it last year. So it's not going to be 22 seconds.
Well, if you put your lucky shirt on for the race, I guarantee that will help.
Yeah, my new Ferrari swag that my co-host graciously got me. But yeah, it should be, I think this one will be a lot more interesting. One last thing before we move on. The Tsunoda-Ricciardo thing, that looks like a duo that might not be getting along too well for the rest of this season. Both drivers that are driving for a spot in F1 next year.
Right, so we'll see. And that's good.
Yeah.
Give me something to watch. But I could go back and watch that final lap or final two or three laps where Tsunoda got the order to let Ricciardo by. And then Ricciardo really didn't have anything for the next car in front of him.
Which he was Magnussen.
Supposed to overtake.
Yeah.
And if you know anything about K-Mag, is he's going to be a bulldog until somebody or both go off.
Yeah.
So I knew Ricciardo wasn't going to get around him, but the radio calls on the last couple laps of that race were hilarious. And it was only the broadcast call. So I wanted to go back, and I don't know if you can do this or not. If I could have, if I would have had my usual setup, and I was lazy about that too, I could have switched to Sonoda's radio, and I guarantee you that was 1/10 of the shit that he said.
We got the good stuff from Ricardo. He was like, well, because Sonoda did this bullshit after the race where he got right up next to him, then blew by him.
Yeah, that was...
Ricardo said, like, just immature, and then called him, like, a fucking helmet, which is, like, Australian lingo.
For dickhead.
So, that was pretty funny. Sonoda, he's funny on the radio, too, because he was...
Well, he was pissed when they, when they gave him the order.
Yeah.
And then, you know, they radioed back and forth a couple times, and he's just like, basically to his race engineer, fuck you.
Yeah.
He was pissed.
Yeah.
But, hey, you know.
At least there's some fire.
Something.
Some fire in some of these teams.
Right.
Let's see. Finishing order, not all that interesting. Verstappen, Perez, Sainz was your podium. Leclerc ended up passing Russell for fifth. The one thing about Russell is he, under pressure, not all that great. If you remember Singapore, where he had a chance to win, then he crashes into the wall.
Right.
He was in a, he had Leclerc hightailing him, and he folded. He went off the track. Lando Norris, sixth. McLaren, decent. Maybe not knocking any socks off at the moment. You would imagine that's a team that gets better throughout the season. Alonso and Stroll pretty content with their 9-10. And then Zhou Guanyu finishing just outside of the points in 11th. Not bad drive for that team. And K-Mag in 12th. Sargeant plus two laps. And the rest is history.
I have to say, under the lights... in practice and otherwise, that the Kick Sauber green is not unlikable. I think it's actually a good livery.
It's loud.
It's
but I don't mind it.
But any loud can I okay, so here's what I think Alpine needs to do to get off of the bad mojo. Change your goddamn color. Pink and blue is no good. That is no good.
I think it's that sponsor they have that has that pink, and they just have to roll with it.
I'm telling you right now, you change the color of that car, you change your destiny.
It's not the best looking machine, but yeah, that's a team that should be just a lot better than they are. And they're not.
Ryan Reynolds. Change the color of the car.
Yeah, and all their technical staff left, so that team's in.
Well, maybe most a bit of a casual shambles. Watchers rarely get, and even people like us who follow it. I follow it to a certain degree. I don't read every article, but yeah, when technical directors and people leave the company of building the car. Then that's a problem, and it sets people back.
Yeah, it does. So we'll see what happens with that team, but yeah, pretty much standard procedure at the top. I see you're looking at the layout here for the Saudi Arabian GP. So, do you have any color?
Yeah, Jetta Corniche, and one of the weird things about this track is it's basically. I don't know how to describe it. It's a straight line, not a straight line, but it's very narrow in its real estate. Right. So there are a lot of turns and interesting, parts of the track, but it just, when I think road course, I think a little bit wider.
Yeah,
but this is like
they call it a street course, but what you saw that. It's brand new, by the way.
Right.
It's from like 2021. It's street course by the bullshit Middle Eastern oil money standards where they just manufacture
everything. The ocean is on one or the other side of this, and I think it's this side right here.
Yeah.
But yeah, it's not. There the streets go, if you watch the helicopter shots of practice, yeah, there aren't people driving on this ever. No,
it's a carpet. You saw the pavement. I mean,
it is beautiful.
Yeah.
50 laps, as you said, first GP 2021. It's a long track, 6.1 kilometers. Lap record is Lewis Hamilton from the year that the track opened. So 130.73. And I believe lap records are
in the race.
In the race.
Yeah.
So we've seen some quicker times in practice, 128.9-ish.
Yeah, Alonso did that today.
Yeah, so here, interesting to note, here's a guy who he's 40-something years old,
mm-hmm.
and he basically says, okay, switch flicked, I will now crush the rest of the field. He's that good of a driver.
Yeah, and he's very...
The Aston car must be capable.
Yeah,
at least in practice scenario. I just think it's really interesting to say, you know, I can crush you guys whenever I want. I just can't do that during a race and get the car to the finish line.
Yeah,
I would either blow it up or something bad would happen.
That's the thing. It's like there's like two or three drivers that. I just put them in Perez's seat and we would have an epic showdown for a championship, but instead it's Perez who is just okay. Occasionally wins races, and by occasionally, once in a blue moon in the greatest car ever assembled. So
yeah. So I also pulled up an interesting, because there's always a buy tickets link.
Yeah.
Can you give me a calculator that tells me what 29,200 SAR
are in
dollars. And that was sold out, by the way. That's the Paddock Club.
That's the Saudi Rial coin or dollar, and that would be 7,731 United States dollars.
Okay, so pretty, you know, compared to the Indy 500, where you can get a fantastic seat for $400.
Great seats on the home stretch near the finish start finish line, and they were like $130.
Right.
So
the ticket.
Yeah.
I mean, the guy out on 116th might be able to get more. So, yeah, I just thought that was kind of funny. Premium lounge. Now, that was the high end. That was the pretty high end.
Okay, but the low end is 400, 500. Like, it's still ridiculous.
Yeah. And I think that was a three-day pass. But still. I mean, we looked at going to Toronto, or no,
Montreal.
Quebec.
Yeah.
Montreal.
Yeah.
And between the two-day pass and a hotel, it was going to cost almost $10,000 for the three of us to go. That didn't include any kind of ancillary.
Yeah. That's just to see the race or whatever.
So, just... I don't know. I found that interesting. I never clicked the button, so I just did. If anybody wants to go to Jeddah, even as a poor man, you're going to be spending several thousand dollars.
Yeah, it's not the working man's sport.
No,
that is for sure. I think that pretty much does it. Hoping to see some interest on the track. We'll see. IndyCar returns this weekend. The GP of St. Petersburg, which is usually interesting to say the least. So I'll be looking forward to that Sunday. So should be exciting season there. I mean it usually is.
We'll keep a close eye on other motorsport. Obviously we have a look at NASCAR here and there, so mm-hmm. we'll keep doing that. And yeah, here we go.
Yeah, all right, we're gonna move on.
Let you transition to soccer, and I shall grab another frosty Miller Lite as you do so.
All right, I will go ahead and do that. And pretty exciting weekend in the Premier League, which will be our main focus this time around. If you haven't been paying close attention or any attention at all, I suppose, you're looking at one of the most interesting title races in quite a few seasons. Three real players involved, with Liverpool, Manchester City, who we will get into here momentarily, and Arsenal sitting in third place. The three teams are separated by just 2 points, so Liverpool top with 63 points, Manchester City second, 62 points, Arsenal third with, you guessed it, 61 points. Aston Villa, who continue to punch above their weight, I would say, sit fourth on 55 points, so kind of sniffing around, although probably not truly involved in a title fight. So this is made for very interesting watching for this league for quite a while now. Arsenal looked like maybe they were sort of going to be left to hang dry, but City and Liverpool, while they have been good, have had a tendency to drop points from time to time, which is rare. If we go off of history, where these two teams were involved in title races where they were just winning every single week, it's a little different now. They seem to be, while still obviously performing at a high rate, they seem to be a bit more vulnerable than at other times. So Liverpool got the job done last weekend late against Nottingham Forest. It took a 99th minute winner from Darwin Nunez to see them take 3 points and continue to stay at the top. And then on Monday, Arsenal demolished Sheffield United 6-0. Sheffield United, not good, it's safe to say. 20th position, which is dead last, 13 points. They have a goal difference of minus 50. So not playing very great football over in Sheffield there. But that means we here turn our attention to the Manchester Derby. To be honest, maybe not one of the most hotly contested rivalries in soccer, just due to the nature of it. Used to be Manchester United would pretty much just kick the shit out of Man City every time they played, until Man City were flushed with that sweet, sweet oil money cash in 2008, and were subsequently basically bought their way to becoming very, very good and playing great soccer. And now it's sort of completely flipped, where you usually expect Man City to win. And they do end up doing that in this one, but maybe with a bit less ease than they would have liked.
Yeah, this was fun to watch. Obviously, I think at least going into this particular fixture, Man City sat second. Man United seventh. But yeah, My first tick here was 8th minute. We had a Rashford goal. That makes it 1-0. Man U, and it was off the top bar, but fair effort.
Yeah, to say the least. It was a very, very well-taken shot, and I guess it really, you really got the sense that United were the ones taking the game to City in the first 20 minutes or so, which they've had a tendency to do when this game is played at the Etihad for whatever reason. I guess, you know, when you don't have 70,000 fans expecting good things from you, you kind of play with a bit more freedom at times, and I think that's what they do quite often in this match when it's at Man City. And honestly, you kind of felt like a goal was deserved there, although maybe not in that fashion that Marcus Rashford, who is a striker that hasn't really been in form this season, totally just kind of beats the shit out of the ball and completely unsavable from a City perspective. And that'll definitely go down as one of the better goals from this season.
And, I also had the same note here or observation that Man U was on the ball early in this match. And Man City had, in the first half, several corners that set pieces did not really transpire from that.
You kind of get into this argument of how valuable are corners, and certain footballing philosophies value the corner more than others. And I think it kind of goes to show in this first half where Man City were, you know, not really at their best, but they won like 11 or 12 corners. Sometimes what that really shows is that United, in this case, have the center of the pitch really well defended. And I know you mentioned it a few times while we were watching, but they set up in a way where they really were able to frustrate Man City, especially in the first half, where anytime a shot was taken by Man City, it usually was met by about 6 red shirts that were sort of positioned themselves in what looked like a wall.
Yeah, there's certain matches that you can watch, and it seems like even the team with better possession is met by the opposition everywhere they turn.
Yeah.
And that's what it looked like for me. I think during the match, I said this to you, a lot of potential calls that weren't calls. Both teams played a little softly. Mm-hmm. Didn't see a lot of real harsh attacks at the ball, or
no big challenges. And the referee was definitely a little bit, I would say, hands off in the first half, at least, and throughout most of the game, really. But that's where I brought up right when we transitioned, but this is not a rivalry that is super hotly contested like you would expect from some of the bigger matches in Europe, and even just in England in the Premier League. And that's not ever really been under Pep Guardiola. Man City's style of play has never really been to bully you and make these big smashing tackles and just out, I guess, be more physical than the other team. So I wasn't totally surprised by that. But in terms of the officiating, I would say it was probably a little hands-off, but not necessarily a bad thing in terms of letting the flow of the game kind of take progress.
The other thing that I had noted here was that the goalkeeper for Man U was playing exceptionally well in the first half.
Andre Onana. He's a little divisive there in United because he will have games like this one where he makes a bunch of saves and probably, you know, this one ends 3-1 to Man City, but probably keeps that scoreline a bit more flattering to them, where other times he will look just terrible and not be able to save anything. So we definitely got a match from Onana where he was definitely keeping, maybe not totally keeping United in it, but making the saves that he had to. I saw a pretty big switch after about the 20th minute where Man City seemed to rev up the pressure, a lot more shots firing in. And then if you recall in the 45th minute, that was sort of, I think it was sort of spearheaded that point with Erling Haaland missing one of the most blatantly obvious goal scoring chances you'll probably see.
Yeah, I have that. Blows it. And that's not his style typically.
Mm-hmm.
But yeah, he had a chance in the 45th to score, and it just came awkwardly off.
Yeah,
the pass.
I don't know if he wasn't expecting the ball to come in like that, or basically the net was empty. He made contact with the ball and it did not go in, which for a guy like Erling Haaland is beyond rare. I mean, he's putting that in 9 times out of 10, if not more. So he basically a goal scoring machine that broke in that instance. And then you get into the second half, and this is where things really sort of flipped. This was a great match, and probably will go down as one of the better matches for Phil Foden in his time at Man City so far, at least. 56th minute, Foden cuts in on his left foot and just, I mean, a beautifully taken shot.
Way out.
Yeah.
Yeah, way out. Just a really nice strike on the ball.
Mm-hmm.
That gave us some hope. First half, I was a little bit reticent that Man City could pull off a win, but as we've seen in this league, things can change fairly rapidly.
Yeah, I mean, but that goal and then the Rashford goal at the beginning were both sort of, maybe not came out of nowhere, but, you know, you wouldn't expect these two shots to go in more often than not. So you really saw a great showing of technical ability in this match throughout. And basically, that from that time until the second goal comes in, it's Man City applying most of the pressure, pretty much. Weirdly, all of the things that United were doing well in the first half just stopped. So they weren't really taking advantage of City's mistakes. Now, they did have a few chances on the break, but it seems like they just kind of forgot how to finish chances. And
yeah, we went pretty far into the second half. That Foden goal was in the 56th minute, and then we didn't see another opportunity until 82.
Mm-hmm.
And that was another Foden, correct?
Yeah, that one was probably, although of course the big monster shots are great for the highlight reel, I think this one was much more technically I guess sound and from a more of a nerdy perspective, a lot cooler. Phil Foden has this great sort of 1-2 link up with Julian Alvarez, and he picks him out, crashing into the box. Foden makes this great run and makes it 2-1, and you knew it was pretty much toast there. United seemed like they were kind of just trying to hang on to what they had, basically since Rashford scores that goal in the 8th minute. I mean, you can see it from the way they set up defensively. It's just that big wall. We're crowding the box and just kind of taking all of these major hits throughout.
Yeah, so this one goes plus 8 overage, and I don't know the exact time stamp, but...
Yeah, it was 90 plus 2 where okay. You get the third goal from Haaland, finally.
Haaland, yeah. Just basically seals the deal 3-1.
Expected, I would say. Yeah.
Entertaining to watch. Really good match.
Basically, what you're going to have to lock into the title race if you want to take away much from these matches, just because if you continue to follow these three teams, Liverpool, Man City, and Arsenal, they're pretty much, you know, if they're not playing each other, they're more than likely going to beat their opponents, because there's three teams that are just a class above at the moment, and there's not much to separate them. Liverpool and Man City do play on Sunday, so that's definitely one you're going to have to pay attention to. Potential title decider, to me it feels like Liverpool and Man City are the real players, and Arsenal, although I don't know. I just don't really trust Arsenal because they're a lot younger. But it's going to be very interesting, so listeners, you should definitely make sure you're keeping up to date with the results of these three teams, because we have a really great title fight, and it just adds more interest to these matches as you watch.
Agreed. And so this one will put in the books for a 3-1 win for Man City. Mm-hmm. Any other potential things we should be looking at as far as the many, many leagues of,
yeah, so,
of football?
The Scottish Premiership is it's sort of becoming which team wants it the least, or it kind of seems like that, between Rangers and Celtic, who both lost at the weekend. So Rangers lead by 2 points. So that is obviously a title race that we'll continue to keep an eye out on. If you turn your attention to Germany, it actually looks better and better for Bayer Leverkusen. Basically, Bayern Munich keep dropping points and Leverkusen keep winning. So again, we are getting closer and closer to a new champion in Germany for the first time in 11 years. So that is going to probably be the story of the year for this season. And then the Champions League is heating up, getting into the knockout rounds. That is your competition to crown the champion for all of Europe. And then looking ahead to the summer, quite a few big tournaments. The Copa America, that's going to be here in the United States. Traditionally crowns your best international team from South America, but since it's in the U.S., obviously the United States will be involved in some other North American opponents. And then the Euros, the European Championship, which for my money is one of the best international tournaments to watch, is going to be, that's going to be must-watch television as well. So a lot down the pipe for sure.
Good.
Yeah.
Trying to think if there's anything else we need to cover on the soccer side of things. Celtic.
Yeah, it's, again, who wants it the least, basically, is what it looks like. Celtic are kind of shit. Rangers are slightly less shit at the moment. So
we had some flashes of improvement.
Yeah, that's the thing, is they look good for two matches or so, and then they just drop a stinker. So they lost to Hearts again at the weekend, 2-0. after beating Dundee at home 7-1, so it's kind of hard to really tell what's going on there. Rangers lost at home to Motherwell in the league for, I think it was the first time since like 1997 or something. So there's just, I don't know what the deal is, but no one really is taking the championship by the balls here. So we'll see what happens. But yeah, it's getting down to the business end of the European season. So there's definitely going to be a lot of interesting matches within the next roughly 2 months or so, and then into the summer. So,
okay, well, coming up on the diamond anniversary of the show, I think we're getting close to 75.
I think this is 75.
So this may be the 75th.
Yeah, I think it is, actually, now that you say that.
Yeah.
And then, I don't know, we'll have to do something for the big hundo. Of course, that's quite a while away, but a
few weeks off.
Yeah,
but
it's still in our sights.
Got a lot of stuff coming up here. We'll keep a close eye on all of the fun stuff in motorsport and football.
Yeah. Looking forward to IndyCar coming back. Open wheel racing, that is immensely competitive. A lot of driver changes in that one over the off season, and people, I can't express it enough. If you want to watch entertaining racing that's entertaining every race, just watch IndyCar. You lock into that series because it's awesome and unfortunately a little undersold here.
Agreed.
Agreed. I think that is our cue to shut her down for the week.
Okay, so yeah, just approaching the hour, and we shall get going.
For the sake of health, I took a walk one morning in Dundalk. I met a jolly tart man on the roadside walk. A friendly conversation came between this man and me. Well, that's how I came acquainted with the tart man from early.
For executive producers, Richard Tanaka, Mark Hipp, Brian Greenwell, this has been Tackling the Chicane, possibly episode 75, copyright 2024. Thanks for listening. We'll see you next time. Midway.